with three lines from the bottom on Chris Ballard on the page.
Sorry, no, on the last line of Chris Ballard on the page. Yeah. Omar Rava, Chada Iska v'trei Shtari, stated the Melva, the Malva. Trei Iski v'chad Shtari, stated the Loga. What Rava is pointing out is simply an eight hatova to make sure that things are done fairly. And his reasoning is this. What he's saying is, normally, remember that theoretically, every joint venture should be a 50-50 joint venture. I lend you 50% of the money, you invest 50% for yourself, 50% for me, and we share the losses and we share the profits, right? The reason we cannot do that is because then it's rebate. Why is it rebate? Because it turns out that you are working for me, selling my merchandise and making money for me simply because I gave you money to invest. It means you're paying me back money for the money that was loaned to you. Right? You're paying me back work with the money that's loaned to you. That's rebate. So therefore, but either we could give you a salary, or what's more common is we give you a larger share of profit than loss. So in other words, we'll split the losses evenly, but because you're putting in all the work, you're the working partner, instead of taking only 50% of the profit, you'll take 60% of the profit to make up for that difference that it shouldn't be rebate. Okay? But that means by definition that if we have one contract, then when we figure the profit and loss, we're going to first deduct the loss from the whole thing, right? And then we'll be left with whatever profit is left. But if we have the same deal in two separate sections, then what happens is we are not going to deduct profits against loss. So that if one of those contracts, say, loses money, then 50% of the loss is going to be going to the investor, right? And it's not going to be mikuzaz, as they say in modern Hebrew. It's not going to be canceled by the money that was made by the other investor, because it's two separate deals. But on the other investment, I, the investor, am only making out with 40% of the profit. You see? So by definition, if, says Rava, chada iska, if you've got one deal, and you split it into trei shtarim, you split it into two contracts, what that ends up meaning is that state of the malva. The investor is going to be losing money. Because any, I mean, not necessarily, but assuming that there is a loss, you're going to be losing money because we're not going to necessarily be able to deduct the loss before we figure the profit. Because suppose the loss was in one contract, the profit was in the other contract. So then it turns out that I'm going to be taking a full 50% of the loss, and yet I'm only sharing 40% of the profit, you see? So he, the guy that's doing the work, is going to end up not taking as much loss as making the profit that he makes, because he makes 60% of the profit. Whereas if we had first had one deal, I would have said, okay, fine, we had this loss, but we had this gain. Let's first deduct the loss, see how much we're left in profit after we deduct the loss, and then you'll take 60% of that and I'll take 40%. Instead of sharing full 50% of all of the losses first, which is mine, and only getting 40% of the profit on the other one. The reason I only get 40% rich is because otherwise it would be rebate. I have to give him something for his work. I'm giving him that extra 10%, right? Okay. So therefore, Rav is simply pointing out, by definition, if you arrange two contracts, you're going to be exposing the investor to greater risk because you're not going to be able to offset profit and loss. And on the other hand, if you have trei iski, if you have two separate deals, and you put them together as one shtara, so in other words, first you gave him, let's say, $100,000 of merchandise, the next day you give him another $100,000 of merchandise, you say, well, just keep things easy, why don't we make one contract on the whole deal? But if you do that, then the working partner is more open to loss, you see, because he now is going to have to first deduct the full 50% of loss before he can take his 60% of the profit. And therefore, since in truth this was two deals, it isn't really fair to force him to put it into one contract. Therefore, can I have one of your magic solutions? So therefore, says Rava, try to keep things honest, try to keep things fair, and do, depending on what the situation is. If it was one iska, don't put it into two separate shtaros. If it was two separate iskos, two separate days, don't try to put it into one shtar, because someone or the other is going to get hurt.
Yomar Rava. Furthermore, it says Rava. Hi, man. The Kabbal is coming chavre. Upasid. A guy who got into a deal with an investor, and they ended up losing money. Now, the truth is, at any point that I want to pull out of the deal, I can. Because, as we've already seen, we saw this by the din of a poel, where I hire somebody, you can never force a Jew to work for you. Why? Because libanei Yisrael avadim. The guy feels this is no life for me, he can walk out. Obviously, because you damage, you watch for the last minute, doesn't give in, then we have all of those things. You're allowed to hire other people, but you certainly can't force a guy to work. So theoretically, if the guy wanted to pull out at this point and say, look, okay, we took a lot, you know, sorry. You can't say to him, well, so keep working on what's left and let's make up for the loss. Let's make some money. Nah, I just lost my desire for this deal. Nah, come on. Sorry, I don't feel like it. You can't force him to do it. So now, what happened over the years, the guy lost money, but he didn't want to come to you and say, I lost your money. So what he figured is, okay, what the heck, I'm going to keep working. He does keep working with the remaining funds. He ends up making back all the money he lost, plus making a profit. Now he comes to the guy and he says, look, I really could have closed the deal at the opening when we lost the money. And then you would have taken 50% of that, okay? But I didn't do that to you, so I'm a good guy. All right? I ended up making your money. You ought to be very happy. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the 50% of those losses first. Let's start the deal after we deduct those losses. Now we start the deal again, which means that I don't have to subtract the 50% of your losses before I start figuring out how much profit we made, you see, which is very beneficial to me. Because this way I start with a clean slate, and you always take 50% of the losses. So I'm very happy. I only take 40% of the profits, right? So I'd rather you take 50% of the losses up front, and now take 40% of the new profits. And let's look at it as two separate deals, because after all, if I wanted to, I could have told you, okay, let's just cut it right now, and then if you wanted me to work, I could have said, well, if you want me to work, then let's start the deal afresh. But I didn't. So since I'm a nice guy, how about if you give me a little bit of that consideration? Maybe not the whole thing, maybe some of it, okay? Let's say the first $50,000. Just write it off, half of the losses, okay? He's asking him as a... to try, yeah. No, because theoretically he had the right to pull out at that point. So he says, well, I didn't pull out because I wanted to do you good, I'm a friend, but I really looked at it as a new deal. So the guy can, of course, come back to him and say, new deal, my eye. You didn't want people to know that you were a loser, that's all. You're not going to come to me and tell me I've lost your money. So you work your rear end off, okay? Why did you do that? For me? For yourself, so that you shouldn't be known as a loser. Now you wanted to make money and make back the original principal. That's all very nice. I'm glad to see that you did a good job. But certainly don't come back to me and whine. You had come back originally and told me. I could have fine. I would have found myself somebody who wasn't a loser. So therefore, let's hear the inside. So Haiman Dekobelishkin Echadri, a guy who accepts now an investor, and he's the working partner, who plus it. Now he loses the money. Torak Umalye. But he goes out and he works and he rebuilds up the capital and now he even makes profit. Velo Ode, but he didn't tell the guy at the time that this happened and he wants to cut his losses. Lo Mati Avale, he can't come now to the guy and say, well, Dreamy Hap Seda Bahadoi, why don't you carry those losses together with me at a 50-50 rate instead of by cutting them out of the profit? Because for the profit I take 60%. Mishum Da Avale. Because the investor tells him, now come on, man. The reason that you were the one who kept working now to try to rebuild the capital, the principal, was so that people wouldn't call you a loser. That's all. So don't come to me now and say, I should be nice to you. The Omar Rabbah first. Now, did you have a question on this?
Yeah, I have a question. This was an He can't step out from the business once. Basically, I can't force him to go.
Right.
So what about if I, let's say I open a cafe and you know that in the first 6 months the guy doesn't make money, so I live with him a contract and he stays for 2 years. After 5 months, I don't have the courage anymore. I go out. What's that?
In a case where he put in money?
No, he doesn't put money.
He didn't put in money, he put in work.
He the money,
right.
The other works for him. Now, in the first 6 months, usually...
Right. You can't force him to continue to work. Right, but as we saw before, he carries responsibility for losses and so on, and he causes you. If he can't get somebody to fill his place and so on, those were the cases of the mission. We hired somebody, relied on them for your harvest or whatever. They can pull out on you in the sense that they're not your slaves, but if they damage you, they have to pay you. That's a separate issue. You can sue him. You just can't force a guy to do something he doesn't want to do. He has to bear the financial results. You'll sue him. But there's no way to get policemen on him and say, now do the job. That would be saying that he's a slave. He's not a slave. He remains a free man. He wants to risk the suit. Let him risk the suit and take the consequences.
Well, you could do it.
Well, I mean, in whose laws? Yeah, we don't have, I don't know, it's just an interesting question. Do we have like a... Yeah, you can't do it today. I'm saying, but theoretically, in other words, since the whole thing is based on Kiliban and Yisrael Avodin, that's an interesting question. I don't know whether we have the mechanism to actually force somebody to do what he agreed to. That's an interesting question. Here it is. Yomar Rava. Now, another thing, says Rava, is that if you've got two working partners who agreed to work now for an investor, so they now are working together, and they're going to be sharing the working partnership's profits and losses. So how do they trade out the iski to Hariyadadi? But Rava, they make some money. Okay, now, as soon as they make some money, one says, okay, we made some money, now let's split, okay? You give me my profits, we'll deduct the losses, give me my profits, and you take what's coming to you, and you keep working for the guy. So let's split. So if the other guy says, no, you're about to pay, let's reinvest and make more money, we're doing well, what's the matter with you? Dino who did the, he has the right to prevent the other person from splitting. So if the guy says, all right, look, I'll tell you what, let's just give me my half of the profit now, okay? Whatever is left now of the Karen, the principal, you keep investing. So I'm not hurting your ability to make money. You have the same amount of money. I'm just taking out my half of the profit. I don't want to break the deal at this point. Amalei, no, he could say absolutely not. Rivka l'karen mishtabe. What do you mean? What happens if the principal now is lost along the way? We're supposed to still be using that profit for further investment. That's the deal. If you walk off with your profit, how am I going to get the profit now to invest? The Amalei, so then if the guy comes and says to him, so what? You know what? How do we pocket Rivka? Look, you know what? I really need to be able to make another investment, okay? Give me my half of the profit, and I'll tell you what you do. We'll simply go on as not partners. You take the Rebach and the Karen of your part, and you walk. I would just want to dissolve the partnership. You keep working. Your Rebach will be Meshubin Lakana. Amalei, no. He's Kelahadadi Meshubin. What are you talking about? This was one deal for a single investor. The two of us got into it together. And therefore, we are Meshubin one to another. We got to be covered the loss of my half of the Karen with your profits also. There's no such thing until we split. We're not splitting now. What if he tells him, I'll tell you what. Okay, well, let's split. And I guarantee, I'll put up a bond. I guarantee that if you end up losing money from your principal, you can cash my bond to make the difference up and invest my part again. I just don't want to have anything to do with it. I'm sick and tired of you. I can't stand the arguments every night. So the monetary issue is fine. If there's a problem, I'll pay, all right? So nitzlo gruvocha v'nitzlo karna, v'imati l'chof seda, if you end up losing money, darina v'adach, I'll be back in to reinvest. Amalei lo, he can still say no. Why? Because he can say, mazlo, did they trade audience? Look, two people working together always have a better chance of doing well than one guy alone. So I don't want to work alone.
Well, only one is working, the other one is
lending. No, these are two working partners. We're not mentioning the third partner over here. Again, you can't force the guy to work, you see.
Remember, all we're talking about over here, can he insist that they break up the partnership? But you can't force it to work in the partnership. That's the other problem. And you run into the issues.
Money back.
Right. Exactly. Dissolving partnerships depends on the general arrangements of how partnerships. You're right. There are times where you can, obviously. But in Bubba Basta, we'll get into all of the dissolving partnerships. But over here, we're talking about at such time where there's no dissolving that was put into any type of arrangement up front. So, Mela, as long as the investment was for, that's how long the partnership was for. If you had made a separate deal to define the partnership, and obviously at that point the partnership could be broken. A guy now is Makabal Asada, and we're talking about up here Makabal Asada as a chocher, meaning that he has committed himself to X amount of tua a year. Come hell or high water, it doesn't matter if the field produces or doesn't produce, he'll have to go to the marketplace and buy this stuff, right? As opposed to an oris. He's not an oris, he's a choker. And he says, look, you know, I don't feel like weeding. And he tells the owner, he says, my spot, look, what do you care? Okay, it's not your business, I don't want to weed. And you know, take a look at your stuff. I'll give you the amount that I'm supposed to give you, so what do you care whether I weed or not? Ain't Shani in love. We don't listen to him. If you follow Marlowe, because he can say to him, Labakara, tell your baby now, that's really great that you're giving it to me. And what happens when you leave at the end of the lease period, and now I try to get somebody else to lease it, and he looks at this field and he says, oh my God, this thing has been cared for years. You know what it's going to take to get the weeds out of this field? So it's going to be Marlowe for my afternoon. Well, it's good. It's going to be a weed field. You have to keep weeding the field, and that's not the deal. Kashira includes your caring for my land. Says the Gemara, Yomer le'labas, Ochi Kalim, no. If he then says, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will plow under any weeds before I leave, so you get a clean field. Or Marle, no, Chiti Mal Yasabim. What do you mean? Then the next year, I'm not going to have good wheat. I mean, this year I'm not going to have good wheat. So if he says, well, what do you care? I'll buy a good wheat. I'll buy you wheat from the marketplace. Best wheat. He can say, no, I want wheat that grows in my own land. I like having my own stuff. But we'll see later on that even though kachirut is for X amount of tua, it's a backup that I can buy the tua from elsewhere. The basic meaning of the kachirut is we're really sharecropping. All I'm guaranteeing you is, in the event that it doesn't produce, I'll have to buy you the wheat. But I certainly am obligated to give you the produce of that field first. So if he refuses the wheat, the guy could say, well, what kind of wheat are you going to give me? You're going to go buy me the best wheat? I don't want wheat from the market. I want the wheat that grew in my own land. So, on my way, the Yomale, Mankisha Lakashir Manatecha. If he says, okay, look, how much were you supposed to get? 50%? So I'll weed 50% of the ground, and I'll give you that 50%, okay? So you'll have high quality wheat from your field. Yomale, he can still say, Kamanasata Shem Rala Arai. You're giving a bad name to my field. People walk by, they look at it, looks like garbage, and everybody talks about the lawn that looks like garbage. And then, when I need to find somebody else to take your place, or I need to sell my property, everybody says, oh yeah, Joe's property, I'm garbage. Wait a minute, that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, Vatnagat Neshim Ma'alat Lefanai Asabim. The Mishnah says, the guy's taina is that it's going to get full of weeds for me. So that can't be the reasoning. What then is the reasoning that he can refuse this? He can tell him, plowing under doesn't help. Because all that plowing under does is it makes the weeds that currently exist in the field, it makes them dead. But it doesn't do anything to the fact that they've matured and dropped their seeds, has it? So next season, as soon as it starts raining, this field is going to be full of weeds. You're supposed to be karivna before it matures the weed. Then you're going to wait until the thing grows 4 feet high. Now I've got spikes coming out all over the place because of all of the seeds that the weeds dropped last year. So therefore, that doesn't help me very much. And that's why the Mishnah says that it's the problem is that it's malalus on Hayasabim. It's going to end up growing, when it's my turn, it's going to end up growing weeds. Hamekabel sadeh mechaviro. V'lo asata. Somebody who accepts a field on the basis of the arisut, and it doesn't produce. What happens now? Is he mechuyev to keep working on this field, or can he give up? Well, it depends. If there is sufficient growth there for the person now to put it together and make a pile of grain, now we'll see what that is defined by, and we'll see that the reason that we chose this strange definition is because that's what it says in the contract, as we'll examine momentarily, that he has to nonetheless keep working on this field. And says Yehuda, my kids for the Cree, I don't understand. Well, what does the Cree mean? What kind of measurement is that? The point over here is, if there's enough over here that is going to allow you, the seed, to reinvest in it, so that it grows enough that was today nefila, that you will be able to spread out in order for it to grow next year, out of what you've grown this year, then you have to go ahead and continue the deal. Now obviously this stuff is talking about arisut, because if it's talking about chachirut, then it's, and this is as Rav Papa pointed out in the beginning of the Masechta, the Mishnayot from this point on vary, and it's not necessarily for both arisut and chachirut. The Mishnah that we had before was only chachirut. This Mishnah is only arisut, because for the choker, it makes no difference, really, to the owner. Whether he works or you want to pay me, that's fine. I mean, so therefore, the Mishnah over here is the prophet is referring to a choker. And the point is that there should be, to an arisut, and the point is there should be enough for him to be able to replant, says Rav Yehuda. The Bryce explains, how do we get to the din of the Kree? Because if you take a look at a standard contract of Arisut, what it says is like this. Ana ukim v'anir v'ezra v'achsod v'amer v'adosh v'idre v'ukim karya kadama. I will get up, plow, plant, harvest, get a stack, threshing. I will do the winnowing, and then I will build up a kree of tua. I will have a silo of grain for you. So that means that the kree is his commitment in the contract. If there's enough here to make that kree, which we'll define what is in a moment, if there's enough to make that kree, then this contract is still enforceable. But if there's not enough to make a kree, how can you tell the guy to work on a field that doesn't do, the field simply doesn't produce what the contract is required to produce, so you could say, look, forget it. I mean, it's simply not worth the investment in this thing. Yeah, whatever it was. The taste they aren't the people palga, and then the contract continues, and then you will come and you will take care. Va'ana va'amali u'benapkut yabai palga. And I, in exchange for my work and my expenses, will take the other half. The kama kedela, obviously that part depends on how you arrange it, but we're just giving an example of a 50-50 arisu. The kama kedela amid bakri. Well, okay, so what does it mean? What's a kree? The shear is simply enough that it's a kree, the way a farmer looks at a kree. The way a farmer looks at a kree is that you can take the it's like a shovel-like affair with a broad blade, more like a snow shovel, you know, that allows you to pick up a lot of grain and throw it up in the air to do the winnowing. So what you usually do is, when you finish the day's work, you stick the shovel into the pile so that it's covered by the pile. But if you can make a kree that's big enough to be mommy, then you can call that kree. Iboilu, what about rechet ayotin and haigis laigis? How about if it sticks out on either end? Is that okay? Tashma, Rebbe Abu, medidim afash leminez rebbe rechanina, kol she'in koneit shelo ro'e p'nei hachama. As long as the scoop end can be hidden, doesn't see the sun, it's fine. Itmar, Levi Omar Shalosh Sain. Levi says what that equals is three saw.
The Rabbi Yonai says, no, that equals Tusa. Says Reish Lakish, when we say Tusa, it means besides Chutz Min HaHotzaah. So it's got to be worth, we had the same idea before about the shemen, we were talking about the oil that comes out, that it means if you get a rabiyas of oil after you take off all of the expenses, you've got to hire the guy to squeeze the oil and so on. Here too, it means after you've sold enough to cover your expenses, you're still left with this time. Plan also. Kiri Tez 18. Naughty, naughty olives. The anavim, a naughty grape. Beit Shammai Metamin or Beit Hillel Batari. Beit Shammai says they're still considered to be food even though they're naughty. And Beit Hillel says, nope, they're not even food. They're too naughty to be food. My preaches 18, what exactly do you mean by preaches? Amaravuna means riche, they're bad. Bad, they do. Evil, they do. Omar, Rav Yosef, for my crow, where do we see the word parit used in the sense of evil? As it says, we've made pretty Amach, talking about the vision of in Daniel, where they're going to come and they're going to fight the Melech HaNeges, it says, v'nei pritzei amcha, the children of the pritzim of your nation, yinatu l'hamid chazon, they will get up to try to make their vision of Geula work, v'nitsholo, and they will collapse. It's not going to work. So you see, the pritzei amcha, the pritzei amcha means the ones who don't succeed. They have the wrong vision of what it's supposed to be, which means that they're a shayin. Do you see that? Parit is a Russian. It doesn't say that they're a shayin. I mean, it just says that they missed the boat, or that they try and they fail. So you got to find a better pasuk than that. I got one. Because v'holid bein parit shofech dam v'yasa atakat b'ela. The holy Ben Parit, who is a shofet da. This is a Parit, he's a murderer, he's evil. So Pritzei Zeitzim and Pritzei Anavim are mean, bad olives and grapes. The Kama Pritzei Zeitzim, how much would you call, and how bad do you have to be really a Parit? I mean, you got to be pretty bad. The Beloved says, Arbat Kabim Lekorah, if all you can produce is four kav in a korah. A korah is one load in the press. The korah is that big heavy beam that you stick over the press. So now, if you stick in the korah, under the korah, in your bod, when you get only four kav worth of oil, those are really bad, bad olives. Rabbi Yanai says, sa'atai in the korah. I don't know. It's three sopher korah, which is really low pliya and unarguing. Haba atzim ma'al kura ba'olama, haba atzim ma'al plastikon ba'olama. It depends. There are locations that use large presses that you put in three kur in one press. And there's places where you only put in one kur for three presses. Therefore, what he's saying is four kav, and he's saying satayim, which is three times as much, essentially. That's 12. Time, because there's six per saw. So, okay, so he's saying 12, and he's saying 4. But that depends. If it's a three times as large press, then obviously you'll measure the value of the olive in a multiple of 3 than what he did. So it's exactly 4 kav multiplied by 3 is 12 kav, which equals 2 saw, which is exactly what from Yana says, that I am the Korah. Turn it up on it. If it doesn't get that amount of oil, then these olives, not the crop. No. We're on a completely different topic. What happened is the Gemara is going off on a tangent, and the tangent, the general direction of this tangent, as we'll see, is to define these supposed quantities that nobody ever heard of before. And the reason we started with that is because of Kri. We said, okay, but what is a Kri? How do you define a Kri? Okay, we just saw where the Machlok is Levi and the Verabjani. What is a Kri? So now we start, okay, what's a bad olive? How do you define a bad olive? We get into the same Mandi Armin now that it's talking about, so what's a bad olive? Right? And we're going to be taught, we're going to be going through now various missions. What's a weak tree? What's a weak person? In this case, an optimine is a guy between them and tire. But each one of these cases is different. In other words, we started off with our mission where the difference is the investment of an artist. We went on to a similar agricultural question where the real Nafkamina is Tumim V'Taira. And now we're going to really go off in a tangent. Once we already started talking about vague measurements, so we just make a list over here of Mishnahs that talk about strange, vague measurements, and we're going to explain what they are. No. This is not Arisut. I mean, it certainly will have application to Arisut, because if it's not a foodstuff, I mean, then it's not considered to be a product. Turn it up on it. Alud Ilan Shikoko Ra. Now, you were talking about two men, one who is a Zav and one who is a Tohar, climb up a weak tree, or on a Socha Shikoko Ra, or even on a weak branch, or even if it's a strong tree. The point over here is that the tree will be bending because of the people that are there. And therefore, what happens over here is that we view it as the Zav being Mesik, or the Zav being Nisat, all you day the other person. He's moving, and the other person is not moving the Zav. The Zav is moving the other person, in which case, that's one of the two methods of Zav. You can be in the Tommy, it's your asset. So if that's the case, if it's a weak tree, then we view the person underneath as bending, you know, as the Zav is on top, so we look at it as if the Zav is leaning on him as he's bending the Zav, or vice versa. But if the tree is strong, then we don't see that as being one whole movement, right? So it's separate. Where he is, he's moving that, and the other guy is moving his thing.
Movement could have to come from the
third office. Okay. The tree, in other words, the tree itself, each part, because it's strong enough, each part is viewed in isolation. We don't see in a gross sense. I mean, obviously physics is going to tell us that the two weights are combined and we can vector the force of the brace and so on. But we don't, the halakha is measured by gross effects. In terms of gross effects, we don't see one leaning on the other. In any way. So if it's a strong tree or a strong branch, then that would be okay. But if it's a weak tree, now, how do you define a weak tree? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we're always going to see the branch bend. So what? So if you dummy, you launch a kochon ra. And again, we have the Bei Rabbi Anai, which is another reason for our seeing this as a tangent, as a valid tangent. So again, the Bei Rabbi Anai said, kol she'ein b'ikaran l'chuk rova. If you cannot, in the trunk of this tree, cut out a square that is the size of a rova hakav, then that tree is going to be defined as weak. And what's a socha, shekoko ra, what's a branch that's weak? Reish Lakish, kol shenechbet b'chezyonah. Certainly a play on words. Anything that is hidden in its vision. But it actually means, of course, b'chezyon could mean b'achiza. As I hold it, it now becomes hidden. In other words, if it's small enough for me to get my hand around it, so then its vision is hidden in my hand. And so I mean, seeing, excellent, excellent, that's right, that's beautiful, that's correct, that is correct, that is beautiful, right, which of course relates to trail of Sukkah itself, that's hidden. Yes, every day we've been missing like a few paragraphs.
We missed one morning.
And the day before we missed six lines. When are we going to make it up?
Wait
a minute. You know, you've taken to doing some marvelous things with language, which I can only admire. The idea of mixing one word Hebrew, one word French, one word English, and one word Romanian, and then mixing the order in which you do that is astounding genius. The problem is it leaves the listener out unless he's an equal genius, which I am not. Do one.
How does he know what's the root of
the
tree?
In the branch or the root? So he has to estimate to see what, not the root, the trunk, not the part that's underground, the part above the ground. Mm-hmm. not hosted. Now, here's another example of a vague idea. Hamahalech beit haprat. Somebody now who is walking along in a beit haprat. Now, a beit haprat, you will recall, is a field in which a kever has been plowed under. And the Rabbanim made a takana that because we're afraid that the grave has been scattered, I mean, we don't know it's been plowed, because we're afraid that the grave has been scattered, which means that there are small pieces of bone in the field, and since there's not enough to be metame a person, but oil, if it's been broken up, the skeleton, but any body who comes into contact or moves one of those human bones is going to become tame. And so the Rabbanim goes there 100 amas by 100 amas around the place in which the kever originally was. That becomes now a beit hapras. So if you are walking in a beit hapras on top of a stone pathway, so then normally you are not going to come into contact on those stones with the bones, because you're on top of a clean area and that's not moving. However, if you are walking on type of stones sheyachol lasit, which are movable, and you are now on an adam, you're being carried by a human or by an animal, valavehima shekochan ra, and again that's another one of these strange definitions, that are weak, tame. Why? Because since they are weak, then what we view is the movement of the stone beneath their feet as coming from the weight that's on their head, which is you. So in other words, if somebody is walking straight and doesn't care about what's on his back, then the movement of the stones is him, not you. But if we see the guy being crushed and he can barely make it, and he's moving on one stone, he gets to that stone and it jiggles, and then he moves to the next stone, then again, the gross effect is that it's your weight that moves the stone. That's what the part that we see. And the mela, that will make you tame, because you were the one who was making the evidence. So now, what defines a din of koko ra? We say a human who's weak. It's when you're standing on his back and his knees keep wobbling, right? So you've seen this at the weddings, you know, the guy picks up and he's going like this, right? So okay, see, that's weak. And what's the behema? Shikokara? I mean, the Verabiana, again, the Verabiana who defines for us these strange shiurim. Ko shirokhma metilaglali. When you ride it, you cause it to excrete, to defecate. So in other words, it's now intensing its muscles, it's pushing its own anus. And therefore, it's obviously not very well balanced over here. So you can see that it's pushing against the stone, you can view the weight on it. Obviously, they were Yanai. Litzila, litzili. Another shiur that Rav Yanai said is that Litzilah and Litzilin are ba'ar kabim. Now we don't even know what is. Usually we first we said the Mishnah, then we said Rav Yanai. Here Rav Yanai comes along and says, well, when it comes to tefillah, when it comes to tefillin, four kav. What does that mean? Litzilah, mind you, what does that mean? That's like how heavy you weigh your tefillah? Exactly. No. The Tanya, the same as Tzuyak Pesot. Somebody who's carrying a burden, he's got a knapsack on his back. The idea is man tefillah. Now he has to daven. But you have to take off the knapsack because it's disturbing to his tefillah? Or does he not even notice it? And he just keeps praying. So that's what Rav Yanai is saying. For Chotmi Harbar Kavim, if it's less than four kav, just put it on your back, Machin Lacharav. You don't have to even see it. You don't have to notice it. And then you can be mitpalel. But once it reaches Arba'a Kavim, Miniach HaGadikarko mitpalel, then you're not allowed to keep it even in your knapsack, and you have to put it down on the ground. And then, see, that's the danger of having smart people in your bathroom. You know, like this, I almost got away with it, didn't I? No, actually, it's strange. The kav is a volume measure, not a weight measure. And this seems to be a function of weight. But there's a whole discussion as to, first of all, does it really mean weight? Which is, how do we translate four kav into weight? Like we do for a liter in terms of its relationship to gram with water, and so the whole discussion in the Mepharshim of the Rosh, it says that it's a weight function. So how do we turn a kav exactly into weight? But it might also specifically have taken this strange measurement because of the fact that what's disturbing is not really only a function of weight. It's also a function of volume. As we know, if I drank a whole something, it weighs almost nothing. It'd be an empty box. But that empty box is very disturbing if you've got all of it like this. And it's very large in terms of its volume. So there may be a formula over here for the interrelationship of either the kav in terms of measurement, which is at 24 eggs, right? The measurement of the, which is volume. And of course we have the same problem with the kezias. You know, what we do is we take the standard, you know, we do a couple of measurements, say kezias matzah, and that gives it to you in weight, but it isn't really a function of weight. You know, you could turn it into weight by figuring out what the norm is of the kezias of matzah to weigh, but that's very misleading, because the truth is, I mean, the holes in the matzah might be different, you know, if they're part of the normal baking process, they're including in the kezias. Anyway, but it's a very good point, and the truth is there's a lot of discussion, mamish, right here on this thing about. And then, what about, that's for tefillah, what about for tefillin? Tefillin, Tanya, hayamasai matsui al rosho. A guy who's carrying something on his head, utfilin barosho, and he's wearing tefillin. Imayu tefillin rotitzot asur. If the tefillin were being pressed in by this load, you're not allowed to do that if it's designed for the tefillin. The imlav mutar, by the way, this is pointed out in the Notes Kalim of the Shulchan Aruch as a raya that you should be wearing your tefillin while doing all sorts of regular activities. And it's only if you come to something that's literally going to affect your tefillin directly that you have to take them off.
He's rolling his wagon, he's davening. What do you think? The one person says, look, he doesn't care. And the other person says, look how involved he is.
Mm-hmm. I never got any of the stories, so I think so I understand. What would you have said?
I'm capable of being down the house cliff.
I mean, wouldn't it matter in circumstances? But the guy was like a total idiot. That's the funniest idea that he's wearing villains. He said, look at this idiot. What's he wearing villains for? The guy looks like a human being, and he has it says in the pasuk, "Yerumi lekas." Obviously, you can see if the guy's wearing tefillin or not. The second part of that doesn't mean anything. A guy can see if he's wearing tefillin. I don't understand. I need the Baal Shem Tov. What are we saying? The Baal Shem Tov is as good as a guy. Is that the meaning of the story? And the other Jew that was with him wasn't as good as a guy. But the Baal Shem Tov didn't care whether the guy was really wearing tefillin. But just said, "Hey, come on, these stories are nonsense. They're mamish. I never heard one that makes any sense." Anyway, if you could explain it to me, I'll be happy. What's the shear over here for tefillin then? That's what it was no the answer. We're saying that the arba kavim, and that's what it took. The imay yitzin rotzul asur, imlav mutar. Be'ezim asur yomu, this is what the Vei Rabbi Adam was saying. What do we mean by a matzah? The matzah shalav at kavim. Tell me, Rabbi Shia, hamotzi zevel al rosho, the tefillin rosho. A guy who's carrying now his garbage out on his head, and he's got tefillin on his head. What's he supposed to do? Now, where is the tefillin with the garbage fill on the same head? So, how they delay yourself, Amos Tadim. You shouldn't move the tefillin down to the side of your head, and then you have your tefillin like on your forehead while you have the garbage on your head. That's not nice. Delay kashrein b'mosav. Don't tie your tefillin around your waist. They should know them minhagi zayon. That's disgusting. Aval koshram avro'ol v'mokim tefillin. Well, you can take your tefillin shel rosh, tie them next to your tefillin shel yad. That's a fine place to keep your tefillin. Because anyway, I mean, that's an area that's made for tefillin sometimes. So temporarily, until you get the garbage out, you put the tefillin there on your hand. That's fine. Mishum devei shila amru, afil mitpacha shalai masa. What are you talking about? For tavin, zevel. You couldn't take your tefillin zekel and put it on your head at the time that you got your tefillin on your head. Asulam yakal rosh yeshlo tefillin. The karma, does it matter? The shear, according to the Rebbe of Yeshiva. I'm Rabbi Afilu Riva de Riva de Pupadisa. 1 ounce. I don't care what the shear is. It's not correct to put something else on your head while you have your tefillin. I don't even care if it's a tefillin zekel. It's crazy. So
So therefore, he disagrees with this whole Indian that the tefillah would have to do with should be garbage, or should be a certain way, that the girl's face is thrown. It's improper to put anything on your head. The zekel is a teak. It's a little teak that says your name on it. No. The teak, you know, that you carry around. It's a bag for your phone. They haven't thought up that little fancy plastic device yet, cardboard device yet. Over a view of that, my kitzvah the Kree. Where did you come out with this idea of a Kree? Who ever heard of a shear called a Kree? And when he book a day to feel it, the point over here is that there should be sufficient to replant it. That's the idea. The comic day to feel, what is that relationship? Shiv Ami, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Arba'a Sa'in. The Gemara changes to Arba Kabin. Arba'a Sa'in Lekur. So if you have an area in which you would have a core that was normally planted, which is it's the place in which you're able to plant a core of Zera, but that's the Klatra Mishkan, right? And you get out of it core saw.
50
bucks, huh? No, the Mishkan was 50 by 100. Right? Which is the Beit Satayim. Beit Satayim is based on that measurement. The core is 30 size. Right? So, I mean, this means it means 50 by 50 times 30. So it's the Chatzar Mishkan times 15. 50 by 100, whatever shape is, but it's that area. So if in that area you can now put in. Did I say that you can plant a core? I mean, you can grow a core, not a bait core. So you'll be able to grow a core. You can regrow that amount if you produce four saw, or according to the Grozger, the four cob of Israel. With Ami Delay says, no, you have to have Shmonet Sa'in, according to the Grozger, Shmonet Kabin, for a core. Let me explain this to you, because it sounds like a makorka, but it isn't. B'shineid Rav Yochanan v'shmeina ara. In Rav Yochanan's day, the land was fertile, and therefore four kav was sufficient to produce a kor of tefuah. But in Shneid Rav Ami v'kechisha ara, the land was not fertile in Rav Ami's day, and therefore he said you would need eight in order to produce the same amount. Tanan Hasan, Haruach Shapizrata Omarim, in Teo we learned in the Mishnah, that if the wind now has spread out the Omarim, and now we don't know anymore what the leket was. So Ondimo Takana leket Guya Le Asot, Venosein La Aniim. So what we do is we figure out, I mean it's all here, it's just that we can't tell the difference between the leket and what was now. The wind now took after it was already on him, it wasn't like it any longer. I already took it for myself. But the stuff, the Aniyim hadn't come. Now the wind comes, spreads out my stuff, mixes it with the Aniyim stuff. So what do? So as we saw there in Teya, you estimate, Kama Leket Ruyala, so you know saying Laniyim. How much would normally come from this field for Leket? And you give that amount to the Aniyim. It's not an estimate. There is a shear called Kidei Nefilah over here. It doesn't mean Kidei Nefilah what it meant before, enough to plant, obviously. You never lose that much lechet. But it means Kidei Nefilah, what we define as the Nefilah for lechet. That's the thing. Don't estimate the particular field. And that shear, again, is not defined. So we ask, the Kama Kidei Nefilah, he also Rabdini Amr Rebelazar, he said Rabbi Yochanan, Arba'at Kavin Lakur, four kav per kur. Now here we finally address the issue, what do you mean when you're talking about a kur? Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, when you say a kur, are you talking about a kur of Zera or a kur of Tua? That means four kav for every kur of seed that you had? What does it mean for every core of tefuah that was produced by the field, you have to give four kav of what would have fallen as leket? And if you're referring that to seed, you're referring to mapolat yad or mapolat shvarim? Are you talking about where the guy seeded
that area. Because there's two ways to measure it. You can have mechanized seating, and you can have hand seating. Mechanized seating is going to be more wasteful. What you do is you tie a bag, basically, of seeds to the back of an animal, make some holes in it, and then have the animal walk, and obviously that's going to be uneven and so on. Okay, so over there, you're going to end up using more for the same area. And because of that, it would be a completely different measurement. The Beit Kor would now plant a smaller amount than on an animal than it would on a person who's going out and doing it by hand. So which one would you mean? Well, Tashma, the Tiyasu of the Amr Babu, Amr Balazir, some say Amr Yochanan, it's four kavin to a kor of zera. So in other words, we are referring to how much you could plant a kor with zera we're talking about. Okay, but you still haven't told me whether you mean by doing it by hand or by doing it mechanized. You're right, take them. I didn't know the answer to that one. But at least we got you half of your